I'm Rose Kuo with Daily Buzz at Cannes, presented by Sunrider. Today, we're at the Splendide Hotel for another Hot Topics Roundtable segment. And joining me are Rachel Rosen from the San Francisco International Film Festival and Zoe Elton from the Mill Valley Film Festival on the closing weekend of the 67th Cannes International Film Festival. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
I'm curious about how long both of you have been attending Cannes, and if you could please just tell the audience a little bit about your festivals, Rachel.
Okay, so the San Francisco International Film Festival is the oldest running film festival in the Americas. It started in 1957, very much in the model of those early festivals like Venice and Cannes itself. And I have been involved with that festival on and off since 1991. And I've been attending Cannes since 1997, its 50th anniversary.
And Mill Valley Film Festival was founded in 1978, so this will be its 37th year. And I think it's kind of like the second generation of film festivals that were really coming out of the American independent movement. And there were several that sort of came up during that time, Mill Valley being one of them. And I've been coming to Cannes for about, I think, 18 or 20 years. I think 20 years now. It wasn't an anniversary year, so I don't remember exactly which year it was, but quite a long time.
Long enough,
yeah.
Both veterans.
Yeah.
So a lot's been written about the lack of female filmmakers at the Cannes Film Festival, particularly in competition. And Jane Campion, who's the jury head this year, actually made a joke about it during opening ceremonies. I'm curious what your thoughts are about this issue.
Well, you may not want to get me started on this one, but I was very shocked. Last year at Mill Valley Film Festival, I did a panel that LunaFest worked with us on that was on women filmmakers, and we looked at some demographics. We had help from Stacey Smith from USC, and I was shocked to realize that the numbers in America are pretty much the same as they were when I did a similar panel 20 years ago. So I am asking myself, actually, if we do the work that we do as curators, and if we do panels, and if we show women's work at our festivals proactively, what else can we do? I think it's quite striking in Cannes because it's a very important platform for film, and there are two women who have films in the competition. I noticed at their premieres that the five women members of the jury were trotted out together. It's like the juryistas were kind of coming out in force for the women filmmakers. But I think having been concerned that it's hard to find films made by women. But I do feel that one of the ways that we can encourage it is much earlier on in people's careers. So juxtaposed with the proactiveness of the Cannes Film Festival in having, for the first time, five women jurors, it's interesting to look at what's happening in L'Atelier, which is a terrific program that they do with Cine Fondation, where they support new films, and there's an incredible diversity in the 15 filmmakers whose work they've chosen to support this year in terms of geography, and there's one woman. So 15 filmmakers, one woman. And as much as the sort of affirmative action sensibility applied to filmmaking may seem kind of tough, I think that we have to be proactive in encouraging people early in their careers, just so that there are role models that young women have and that young women filmmakers have. So I would encourage Cannes Film Festival to start that with what they do at the Cine Fondation and L'Atelier.
I always have mixed feelings. I'm in a glass house at a festival, so
yeah.
I don't want to throw too many stones. But I think that those mixed feelings come around to the same point that you're making, which is when you're a programmer, you can only program what's been made.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, that that's not to take every programmer off the hook for the number of women in the program or the number of anything. Right. You know, you can always look harder, and I'm sure there's been a lot of discussion about some of the films directed by women in a certain regard and what's right. in the competition and what isn't in the competition. And so, you know, you can get into that politicking, but the bottom line is that the real issue is people getting the opportunities to make films that would be big enough, that would have the gravitas to be considered competition material for a festival like this.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even as things, I mean, you look at the numbers and they look dire, and I think what I see is people self-selecting to different kinds of filmmaking.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily better in the long run, but, you know, I think people are just doing an end run and making the kind of films that they want to make, but then you have a competition that requires a certain amount of polish and...
And the same would be true with films that are on any kind of award track,
right.
you know, and I think we see that over and over again. It's not that there are no women making films or enough women making films. That maybe is debatable, but in terms of the kind of films that would get into a competition like this, where, you know, I mean, the other side of it is that they do have to be very sensitive to really trying to have some kind of, you know, geographic diversity, and I think they do an amazing job of that for the most part, but it's tough. It's
yeah,
really
so
tough.
Really we're talking about money, right?
Rachel,
I mean,
when
we
you
are.
Say self-selecting, are you saying that women filmmakers tend to make a different kind of film? Say, documentaries seem to have a strong representation.
Well, what I'm saying, really we're talking about money. I think that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, what people have been saying for years is, yes, women have tended to gravitate towards films that they can get made. So documentary filmmaking, I think, actually, what are the numbers like in TV? It seems like
TV is a
little better.
I think TV has always been a little better, both in terms of, well, actually, you know, I think for a long time TV has been better because, for one thing, the turnover is much quicker. You know, it can take about, you know, 5 years to 10 years to turn over, 2 years or whatever, to turn over a feature film in a commercial setting. But in TV, the turnover time is much, much quicker. And it makes it much more user-friendly, I think, for, you know, the Lena Dunhams of the world. You know,
right.
Talk about a great female role model. She's terrific. You know, I mean, so yeah, I think
right.
TV is... allowing people to...
So what I suppose is, you know, I mean, why does Cannes have a much bigger problem than Sundance, for example?
Mm.
Because Sundance competition is not big-budget films. And theoretically, Cannes shouldn't have... There are so many European countries. Theoretically, what Cannes should have is a geographical issue with women filmmakers. Because at least in Europe... There are plenty of women filmmakers working in France and in Italy as well. So there are some countries that will give money to women. And then there are some countries that seem to have an aversion to giving over a certain amount of budget to women.
So if
America, for example.
Well, America, but I'm going to ask also, is it budget or is it power?
Well,
or do those
don't you think those things are linked?
Well, they do. That's why I had to ask the question.
Yeah, I was going to say, if countries like France are financing a reasonable number of female filmmakers, why is it the quality of films that they're making? What is it then that is creating a situation where their films are not leaping into that A category at the top festivals? Is it subject matter? Is it filmmaking? Is it voice? And since you're both directors of programming, female directors of programming, very few in the world, among the handful, I think I can count on one hand, does gender play a role? At your organization, Rachel, you guys also fund projects,
right?
So, how much does your gender, you know, play a role in selecting films, or are you just not aware of it?
Well, what I would say is what I'm aware of is diversity, and gender is part of that.
Yeah,
and that's partly. That partly has to do with the kind of festival we program, where we're an international film festival and we're not aiming for, you know, someone said it's not the United Nations of film festivals, that everyone doesn't get a booth regardless of what kind of movie they made that year, but we are aiming to seek out voices that aren't heard as frequently. That's part of our mandate. And so as long as women continue to be in that group. That's part of what I'm aware of. But I learned that working for a director of programming who was a man. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to ascribe that to my own gender. Mm-hmm. I just think that comes from the kind of programming that I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that that actually brings up an interesting point about the sensibility that you have to bring to programming a significant international film festival. You know, when you see films from literally dozens of countries, sometimes, you know, in one day of screening at Cannes, you could pretty much travel the world. And you have to take on so many different cultures. And, you know, culture is not just geography. Culture can be the person living next door to you. And it's, you know, I feel that we have to approach it with a way that is open and sensitive to what other cultures are saying, doing, thinking, feeling, and encourage our audiences to get engaged in that conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what a good festival can do.
When you're programming, do you go in sort of gender and region blind, or do you read everything about the film when you walk in? You know, it's this, the third film from this country, and it's this person, or do you like to go in without any idea about the film?
My preference is to go in blind.
Mine too.
I mean, and then I like to look
not
later
possible,
and to see.
But, yeah.
But well, I mean, even this year, IndieWire reported our gender stats, and I was like, sorry to tell you guys, but Lois is a man. Like, you can't always tell just by what you see on the page.
Yeah.
Like, they made an error because that Spanish man has a name that could be a woman's name also.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's actually quite important to try and, you know, to engage with the film in as open a way as possible when you first see it, because I think then you can really see whether the film is working on the terms that the filmmaker is setting up for his or her film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you can, then you're open to going on that journey.
And then there are films that make you curious, you're
yeah.
right? Like, this is such a perspective about whatever it is, and if it's gender, you're like, I want to know now if a man made this movie about this woman, or if a woman made a movie about this woman. So sometimes it will pique my curiosity, and, you know, depending on what the movie is trying to say, might have an influence on how I feel about the film ultimately, but I like to go in as blind as possible.
Well, and to your point, last year was very interesting with all the discussion about the male gaze and Blue is the Warmest Color. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you had the film that came out of Berlin, which was Gloria, which was also made by a male director, but the film was definitely from the point of view of a middle-aged woman and her sexuality. And it was interesting, those two films.
Well, I was interested because someone asked me a similar question about my programming this year and about, you know, male gazes of women. And I'm like, frankly, I'm also more encouraged by the fact that someone like Kat Candler will make a melodrama with all male protagonists, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. she feels like she has the freedom to have that kind of gaze. And that, you know, what I would like to see is both the male and the female gaze on female protagonists, and same, you know, female directors representing both men and women. That's the ideal, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think where people get tripped up, people meaning storytellers of whatever kind, is that we see so many characters in certain roles, for instance, and then once you've seen it, you tend to think that that is it. I mean, for instance, when I was a little girl growing up in England, I said to my mum, how come there are no women newscasters? And she said, and of course, you've got to, at this point in England, all the newscasters had very fruity English accents, Southern British Standard. And she said, well, women aren't taken seriously. And it's taken me to this point in my life when I thought, huh, did she mean that as a statement of fact? Or was she being facetious or what? But a part of that experience at a very early age told me that what you see is kind of what you get. So if we don't see images of women or minorities or whomever, or if we don't see, you know, women newscasters, which we do now, obviously, but you know, you feel that it's not something that's open to you. And it's just so important that we have that in our lives and on our screens and in our sensibilities.
As festivals, can we better engage, I guess, those voices? I mean, you pointed out it's money, it's tied to money and power. And so how do we break that cycle? Is there...
I mean, it's a little bit hard for festivals because we're kind of downstream in a certain way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like we can do what's within our purview, which is to really seek out those voices.
Yeah.
And to also help contextualize them, because, you know, the thing you were saying about being open to a lot of cultures is something we have to do for our job. But then we have to help the audience also be open to those different modes of expression, because if you're used to just seeing the male news forecaster and then the woman comes on, you have to be helped to see that that person is trustworthy.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I think as festivals, all we can do is continue to seek out what is being made and to advocate for it.
Speaking about what's being made, our industry has really changed drastically as we've moved from the big screen to alternative screens, our phones, our iPads, etc. Are festivals sufficiently engaging in new media and post-cinematic forms of moving images?
I think you guys are probably more than we are at this point. I mean, we used to have the Video Fest, and I think Mill Valley was probably one of the first festivals in the world to have, you know, to actually track video as well as film. But at this point, I feel that a part of what I think we're up against is how both festivals and the cinematic experience and the art house experience keeps its head above water in a changing world. You know, both because of the numerous ways we receive images and stories, but also because of the digital switch. You know, it's just economically, it's been so hard for art houses to actually get, you know, digital cinema onto their screens.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, since we're at Cannes, what have been your favorite films that you've seen so far, now that we're approaching closing weekend and all the conversations bantering back and forth are about who's going to, you know, win the Palme d'Or, the Camera d'Or, etc. Or films that you found interesting this week that jumped out at you.
Well, I have a sort of strange Cannes experience because my festival just ended a week ago.
Yeah.
So I'm very oddly selective in what I end up seeing. So I'm not sure my films are representative, but what I would say is I have really noticed an upswing in popular entertainment at the art house level, and that's what I've noticed. Mm-hmm. So films like It Follows, that's a American independent horror film that's been quite popular here. Or White God, which, you know, is sort of an intellectual take on a genre film. Although I try not to use the word genre to mean horror movies because I'm old-fashioned and I think it means something else.
You think of it in the broader spectrum, right?
Yeah, I think it's a word with a definition.
Yeah, right.
So that's what I've noticed, just more... I like the big ideas, but it's been interesting just to see how much flat-out entertainment there's been in the festival this year.
Do you think that's a reflection of a trend?
Again, I always hesitate. Even, like, when we do our press conference for the festival, I always say, like, I can't even call these trends because, you know, it's five people choosing the movies, so maybe it's a trend in what we're attracted to in any given year.
Zoe, what have been your favorite films this festival?
Favorite films? I mean, there have been quite a few that have been sort of like guilty pleasures, like Mr. Turner, which is just like a masterful filmmaker on a masterful artists, and Turner has never actually been one of my favorite mm-hmm. artists, but I just sort of really enjoyed seeing the work, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it was lovely. But the one I think that has been kind of, you know, kicked me into gear a little bit more is Mommy, Javier Dolan's film. Felt that it was kind of like, it was just sort of refreshing. I mean, I feel that in the competition that there are a lot of very well-heeled filmmakers who are, you know, often returning to the film festival. And Javier Dolan's film, I think, just sort of upped the ante a little bit in terms of just sort of like a, you know, fresh new voice or fresh, you know, new stuff happening. It was good.
Well, he kind of exploded onto the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been somebody who's been doing very interesting things from the get-go.
Yeah. Yes. But I think this is his first Cannes, right?
I think he was in another...
No,
he was
in a certain regard.
That's right.
Yeah. 2 years
That's right.
ago.
Yes,
I think he was a little
ago.
Sore about that. So I recall reading.
But he's in the competition for the first time. Yeah.
Is there anything that you wish you could do as leaders of two important festivals, that if money were not an issue and all the other considerations you have to make when you're programming stuff in a fantasy world, is there something you wish you could do from your platform?
I mean, I kind of wish I could emulate the Cannes model in terms of marketing. Seriously, because yeah. I think, like, they spend their money getting people to think that the coolest place to be mm-hmm. is on, you know, is in the Palais for, mm-hmm. and some of these films are not, you know, things that most of the people watching the stars going up the stairs
yeah.
have any empathy or mm-hmm. particular feeling for. I would love to have the money to try and market the hell mm-hmm. out of some of these films that are harder to get audiences for, and just see if people are, you know, if the playing field is more level in terms of marketing, what kind of cinema people would enjoy.
Yeah, that's an interesting
question. Zoe, how about you?
Yeah. I think if I had unlimited funds, I'd really want to do sort of more of what we already do for filmmakers. I mean, I would love to be able to have filmmakers be with us for as long as they possibly could, and that there would be tons of ways in which they could interact with each other, that, you know, we could really have much more of a, you know, much more space for that kind of conversation, those kind of conversations that happen organically, but to be able to support it more.
Well, Zoe Alton and Rachel Rosen, thank you so much for being on the show, and special thanks again to Sunrider for their support, and the Splendide Hotel for hosting us on this beautiful patio, and Cloud Electronics and Movie City News.